Well, you probably remember that we, before we did the whole series on what Vineyard is all about, we were looking at the Ten Commandments, and today we're looking at the fourth one, Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 16 adds to that, honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live long and that it may go well with you in the land the Lord your God is giving you. I read this a couple of days ago. The world is passing through troubled times. Young people of today think of nothing but themselves. They have no respect for parents or old age. They're impatient of all restraint. They talk as if they know everything and treat wisdom as stupidity. As for the girls, they are forward, immodest, and unwomanly in speech and behavior and dress. It sounds a bit like a paragraph from Mr. Angry in yesterday's newspaper, doesn't it? He's the middle-aged man who's just been beaten by a youngster to the last seat on the bus. In fact, it comes from a sermon preached by a man called Peter the Hermit in the year 1274. So it hasn't changed that much. The generation gap's always been with us. In Jesus' day, the rabbis complained about young folks' hairstyles too. The boys would insist on wearing their hair too short. And from then until now, there's been conflict between the behavior of young people and what their elders expect. It's been the source of many, many words. The fifth commandment looks at this problem. The message stays relevant, even though there have been huge changes in family life that have occurred since its writing. I want to look at those this passage with just some headline points, really, and then at something that I believe God has specifically brought us for today. It's all exciting, but I'm especially excited about that bit. The Jewish family of its time, and to some degree even now, is very different from the family that we tend to experience now. A very close unit, often several generations under one roof, parents being solely responsible for the children's education and healthcare, plenty of support within the wider family network to look after the sick and elderly. Divorce was known, but single parent families extremely rare. Children were and still are considered assets, not nuisances. In fact, the more you had, the better. And in the home, father's rule went unchallenged. Today we live in the world of the clinic, the creche, the school, and old folks' homes. People are more likely to trust a good healthcare plan than the extended family. Fathers no longer tend to pass their skills on to their sons, or at least far, far less. Often, dad's knowledge is out of date with the advances in technology. Or he may well have walked out by then anyway. Families are often scattered around the country with busy lifestyles and houses that militate against caring for the sick and elderly. And the times change and keep changing. Researchers at Johns Hopkins University reported that in 1960, the greatest fears of school children were, one, animals, two, being in a dark room, three, high places, four, strangers, five, loud noises. By 1990, they became divorce, nuclear war, cancer, pollution, and being mugged. It's changed even more since then. I won't read you the last figures. They're even more disturbing than that. It's a very different world We need to bear that in mind. But it's the same core issues. It's about how young children should be brought up and parental responsibilities. It's about how grown children treat their aging parents and what their responsibilities are. It's about the link between the strength of family life and the health of society in general. I want to look at those in the light of the fifth commandment. Honour. Honour. What does that word mean? Well, it doesn't mean obey without question, although obedience is the most obvious way for a young child to honour a parent. Or expressing feelings of love. The way some parents treat their children is more likely to inspire hatred than affection. Or give them their rightful due, because some parents have done very little to earn the gratitude of their children. Honour in Hebrew means to treat as weighty. That doesn't mean to tell your parents that they're overweight and need to join the Biggest Loser. It's something about significance and importance. So, it's more than obedience, it's more than love, it's more than gratitude. Let's look at some of the things that it means in the ever-changing relationships between parents and children, whatever their age. Growing up, if you have your Bibles, you can have a little look at Ephesians 6 and verse 1. We'll also look at Colossians 3. I'll read it to you, but you may want to follow it. Ephesians 6 and verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. In Colossians 3, verse 20, children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. What does honor mean in early childhood? Paul makes it very clear in his commentary on the fifth commandment, obey in the Lord. So for children, obedience is the correct response. It's the response to the discipline that comes from being really loved. That message is clear both in New Testament and the Old Testament to parents with young children. Hebrews 12 and verse 9 says, moreover, we've all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? God shows his love by disciplining his people for their good, for their maturity, for their development, for their protection. And that's the context that human children should grow up in. Disciplined within a loving family. That's God's pattern for doing things. But actually, that flies in the face of many modern theories on child rearing. Theories of free expression and minimal discipline. Parents are encouraged to abdicate their responsibility. Giving that responsibility to children or teenagers who don't have the experience to make sound judgments. And who lack the role models to guide them. And those who are continually pushing back the boundaries in an attempt to know where they stand, because that's what kids do, and that's what teens do, they push on the barriers so that they know where they stand, they are greeted with fudge and compromise from a world that's afraid of absolutes and is afraid of being branded unreasonable. Listen to this poignant proverb. Proverbs 19, verse 18. Discipline your son, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to his death. Wow. It's quite strong, isn't it? The Bible makes a clear connection between indulging, pampering, failing to discipline, and being party to death and destruction. Parents have a clear responsibility to provide firm rules that require obedience. Proverbs doesn't hesitate to actually recommend corporal punishment when those rules are broken. Proverbs 22, verse 15, folly's bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. The Good News Bible translates it this way. Children just naturally do silly, careless things, but a good spanking will teach them how to behave. Now, if some people heard that today, they would be up in arms, wouldn't they? It gets highly controversial in the modern context. It's good to reinforce obedience, but hitting? We've all seen cases of abuse of children where discipline is really bad-tempered violence. Children have been physically, emotionally damaged for life, even lost their lives. This is bullying and abuse, and it's got nothing to do with discipline. And some of you have experienced that. I'm so sad to say. But Paul gives the balance in Colossians chapter 3, verse 21 that we read. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. You might remember an old translation that said, provoke to anger. Now, embitter is a word, a Greek word, that came from the context of boxing matches. And that word embitter is to goad to anger. Now you're getting the picture. Do you want a piece of me? Come on then. Come and have a go if you think you're hard enough. You're nothing but a wimp. You get it? These, of course, are the way that British people would embitter one another. You'd probably just go, yeah, great, big nong, or whatever it is. I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe you can help me with how you would embitter one another. And it highlights the difference between bullying and discipline. Because home isn't a boxing ring. And dad against kids, we're talking about opponents who are not fairly matched. We should never treat discipline like a fight. Dads who pick fights with children, who strike physical blows when they are stronger, or who strike verbal blows when they are so much stronger intellectually, dads who demand unquestioning obedience or else and vent their own frustrations on their children are nothing more than bully boys or even sadists. The foundation of discipline or for discipline is love. Whatever you think about corporal punishment, there is a need for discipline, however it looks. However you feel about the whether a child should be spanked or not, I want to remind you, you can do as much damage verbally without ever hitting. So be careful about taking the moral higher ground of making your children feel that small, but never having spanked them. So we keep the spirit of the fifth commandment as our children grow by treading a tightrope between two extremes. That we don't pamper or spoil, which does no good at all. That we don't tyrannize, which is even worse. But that we insist lovingly and caringly that basic rules are kept. Would someone mind get me a glass of water, please? That would really help. So we're thinking about honor in growing up. We think too about independence. The writer Harold Wilkie wrote this once. I was 2 or 3 years old, sitting on the floor of my bedroom, trying to get a shirt over my head and around my shoulders, and having an extraordinarily difficult time. I was grunting and sweating, and my mother just stood there and watched. Obviously, I now realize that her arms must have been rigidly at her side. Thanks, God. Every instinct in her had wanted to reach out and do it for me. Finally, a friend turned to her and said, in exasperation, Ida, why don't you help that child? My mother responded through gritted teeth, I am helping him. From the early days, it's a growth towards independence, various stages with all their implications, heading towards adulthood and hopefully also maturity. The two don't always go hand in hand. So when young, honor effectively means obey. What about when we leave home? Do we carry on in the same way? Well, the Bible's answer is a clear no. According to the Bible, there are two special turning points when your parents' desires should take second place. This is interesting to some of you, because you want to know what they are. The first is when you discover God's will for your life. If God's will and your parents' will pull in opposite directions, there is no question who should win. Now, it isn't usually an argument about whether you should have a car or a motorbike, because these things are not normally big on God's agenda of will for your life. It's more to do with the direction that you're going in. In Matthew 10 and verse 37, Jesus said, "Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me." This is a no contest. Secondly, if and when we get married, leaving and cleaving. Genesis 2 verse 24, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh." The old style bond with parents is broken to forge a new one with your spouse. And the wishes of the new partnership prevail if there is disagreement about a major decision to be made in your married life. Did you hear that, everyone? Good. In today's society, those who don't marry often move out from the family home, unlike then. And so there is a working out of how that happens in non-married situations too. And that maybe gives us an insight into Paul saying, "Obey in the Lord." A young adult's right to make decisions must be respected. If God pulls firmly one way, we know best is an inadequate counter-argument as parents. And the process of independence needs a bit of give and take on both sides. Because there's also about parents and letting go. Parents can tend to be possessive too long. When I was 30, I really didn't need my hand held crossing the road. But there was still that temptation from my mom and dad. You know, that gut response that had been there for years. It's like, people are watching. Trying to live our lives through our children, using subtle emotional blackmail. "You're making me ill." That could be anyone. My mother never said that. I just want you to know that. That's just not my weakness coming out. But I've heard it said. Stuff like this can lead to bitterness and resentment, even retard the maturing process. And it usually achieves the opposite of what's hoped for anyway. It takes courage and love and self-discipline to let go. But on the other side of the coin, the Bible warns adult children not to treat their frail parents with contempt. They are not to be discarded as a nuisance. Good for babysitting, good for looking after the kids while we want to go away, but when they start to get ill, oh, well, that's different. Deuteronomy 27 and verse 16 says, "Cursed is the man who dishonors his parents." Whether physically or verbally, adult children should not use their greatest strength to hit out against a parent. They should not discard them. In Jesus' day, Jews had yet again found a legal sidestep to following through on their financial responsibilities. Jesus says to them in Mark chapter 7 and verse 9, "You have a fine way of setting aside the commands of God in order to observe your own traditions. For Moses said, 'Honor your father and your mother,' and anyone who curses his father or mother must be put to death. But you say, 'If a man says to his father or mother, whatever help you might otherwise have received from me is korban,'" that's a gift devoted to God, "'then you no longer let him do anything for his father and mother. Thus, you nullify the word of God by your tradition that you've handed down.'" And you do many things like that. What they were doing is they're saying, that little bit of financial responsibility that would have helped you, that's the bit I'm giving to God. Now, you wouldn't want me not to give to God, would you, Mom? Would you, Dad? We do that in a lot of areas of our life, actually. When something is asked of us by God, we say, well, if I have to do that, I'll have to give something up. I'll have to give up spending time with my spouse. And you wouldn't want me to do that. No, I want you to give up watching the telly on Tuesday night, actually. That's the one. You get what I'm saying. Jesus was speaking against depriving parents of the support they needed, in that case materially. He exposed the hypocrisy of using spiritual language to do something that was very unspiritual. Jesus practiced what he preached, even hanging on a cross. He ensured that his mother would have a roof over her head when she was gone. And honoring a parent may often be as practical as that. It could well involve considerable personal sacrifice. An old folks' home may be the easiest option, but it may be the exact reverse of honoring our parents. And again, there are things to be held in tension. Dominating mother, small flat, breakup in marriage. These are the things that we have to hold in tension, because there's a difference between sharing the home and someone else ruling the home. The important thing is in honoring that our parents should know that they are loved and respected. And no Christian should evade that responsibility with its practical consequences. 1 Timothy 5 verse 8 says this: if anyone doesn't provide for his relatives, and especially his immediate family, he's worse than an unbeliever. Strong words. Now, what does that look like? I can tell you, for my brother, it looks likely that what it means for him is that he will give up his job to care for mum. That's what it looks like. He sees that as part of his calling and the outworking of honoring his parents. And I can't commend him highly enough for that attitude. And it's an attitude that incidentally releases us to serve you. Because without that choice, our choices may well be very different. Part of honoring is also the realization that though elders can be a financial drain, they have much to offer in wisdom and experience, much to pass on to children and grandchildren, much to invest in terms of time and many other things, valuing those things, receiving what they can give. Once there was a little old man. His eyes blinked and his hands trembled. And when he ate, he clattered the silverware distressingly. He missed his mouth with his spoon as often as not, and dribbled a bit of his food on the tablecloth. Now, he lived with his married son, having nowhere else to live, and his son's wife didn't like the arrangement. "I can't have this," she said. "It interferes with my right to happiness." So she and her husband took the old man gently but firmly by the arm and led him to the corner of the kitchen. There they sat him on a stool and gave him his food in an earthenware bowl. From then on, he always ate in the corner, blinking at the table with wistful eyes. One day his hands trembled rather more than usual, and the earthenware bowl fell and broke. "If you are a pig," said the daughter-in-law, "you must eat out of a trough." So they made him a little wooden trough, and he got his meals in that. These people had a 4-year-old son, of whom they were exceedingly fond, and one evening the young man noticed his boy playing intently with some bits of wood and asked what he was doing. "I'm making a trough," he said, smiling up for approval, "to feed you and Mama out of when I get big." The man and his wife looked at each other for a little while and didn't say anything. Then they cried a little. Then they went to the corner and took the old man by the arm and led him back to the table. They sat him in a comfortable chair and gave him food on a plate. And from then on, nobody ever scolded when he clattered or spilled or broke things. That's a grim fairy tale written many, many years ago. And things haven't changed, have they? What about the wider consequences of this commandment? The promise: they will live long in the land. Theologians are debated whether this promise applies to individuals or to society as a whole, and they have continued to debate and they continue to disagree. The answer is probably both. In a day where there was no social welfare, the family where parents were honoured would meet their responsibilities best, and that would have a profound effect on the welfare of the elderly. But also, the Bible sees very closely a link between the health of family life and the well-being of society. Indeed, the social consequences of obeying this and other commands are set out clearly in the Old Testament. Deuteronomy 4 verse 40 says, Keep these decrees and commands which I'm giving you today, so that it may go well with you and your children after you, and that you may live long in the land the Lord gives you for all time." Israel identified in a close way, not only with their parents, but with their extended family and with their leadership. In 2 Samuel 5 verse 1, of the king they say, "We are bone of your bone and flesh of your flesh." In our society, individualism is the order of the day. And the values that emanate from a close, stable family life based on honoring parents is being lost. And that has a huge effect on respect for authority. It has a huge effect on social values. Crime. Crime rises most sharply where family breakdown is most common. It's an extremely clear link. Crime is low risk where family life is most secure. Interestingly, in Britain, crime is lowest of all in the Jewish community. Values. In the Old Testament, home was a place where children learned standards. They honored their parents by accepting their standards. Do you know that graffiti was encouraged in the Old Testament? Did you know that? God's commands were to be written on the doorposts of the home. Sound values were learnt in the home environment, which helped for social stability, an atmosphere of respect and care and forgiveness. And the opposite is true. Where home life is about power struggles and selfishness, it'll produce selfish, power-hungry members of the community. Honor helps bridge the generation gap. Honor helps resolve the tension between old and young. Honor, its consequences spread way beyond the family into society as a whole. In Australia, family life is at a higher precedent than it was in Britain when we left. And as such, you have a more stable society. But you're going the same way. It's going the same way. And that's very sad to see. But we are different, aren't we? Because we're kingdom people. And that stuff doesn't have to apply to us, does it? Because we're different, aren't we? Are you different?
Yeah, maybe.
We seek to influence rather than being influenced by, and to honor in the wider family and the wider church family. So let's seek to bridge that gap today. How do we do that? Some of you come from broken homes. Some of you have had poor examples of parenting, or no example. Some of you have been beaten and bullied with words or physically. Now the good news is God has got something to say to us today about this. He's got his timeless word which we've just heard, but he's got his today word. And his today word is both challenging and encouraging. It's challenging because we need to act on it. It's encouraging because he wouldn't ask us to do it if it wasn't possible to do it. And that's where God speaks, and speaking takes us from trust to faith. If God says, "I want you to do this," he's not going to say, "I want you to do this and you can't." "I want you to do this and it's impossible." And what God is saying to us this morning is he wants us to be the generation where it changes. The generation where it all changes if it needs to change. To make a commitment that we will leave a better foundation for our children than we had. Parents, you don't know how to parent because your parents were lousy parents. "I don't know how to do it, I can't do it." God will teach you. Learn how to parent from God. Look at what he's like. Learn how to parent from people within this fellowship who inspire you. Don't say you can't find any. Learn from those whose kids you'd like your kids to be like. Take a look at those kids and go, we'd like our kids to be like that. What can we learn? Be determined that your kids will be able to climb higher as people on the building blocks that you've put in place in the family. Kids, those of you who are a bit younger kids, don't place all the responsibility for the relationship on mom and dad. Practice being grateful and thoughtful and respectful. Seek to behave as adults with our parents. Fight any patterns of taking without thanks. Be prepared to treat them in their old age as we would hope to be treated in ours. For some, today, it means you'll take a decision that you will no longer keep talking about the fact that you can't see God as a good father because of your father. You should be over that by now. It's an excuse, not a reason. Because God can give you revelation of the Father He is, and He can heal your brokenness, and He can replace lies with truth. You do not have to be this way. Refuse to let your relationship with parents wreck your relationship with God or each other. To refuse to let the sins of previous generations be our own sins. This is what I'm like. My dad was like it. I'm like it too. It's a lie from the enemy. You don't have to be like it. To refuse to let the curses that have been on previous generations be the curses for our generation. To believe that it's never too late to be better parents, to be better children, to be better spouses, to have better homes, to leave a legacy of love, to have a redeemed inheritance. Now, some of you here, and you need healing from what's happened to you in the past. You know you do, because the way you relate to authority, the way you relate as a parent, the way you relate in key relationships means that you know you're damaged goods, and it affects the way you are. But God reveals this because He can heal. It doesn't mean you have to now go through a process that's going to take you a decade before you'll experience wholeness. God can heal in an instant. You may need help with the lies the enemy has spoken into your lives through bad experiences and be set free by the truth. But the truth will set you free. You may need help to know how to stop repeating the mistakes of previous generations, or to know how to avoid overreacting the other way in a way that's unhealthy. Joe and I had parents who I believe were better parents than a generation before them. And they brought blessing into our lives. They enabled us to start from a better place than themselves. Our desire is to leave that legacy with our kids. I pray it'll be yours too. That they will be better kids and they will be better parents because of what they see in us and because of what we build into their lives. That where we understood about holiness and purity, they'll understand more. That where we understood about trust and faith, they will understand more. That where we understood about walking in step with the Holy Spirit, that they will have a greater grasp from a younger age. God has dealt with our lives. He has restored. He has redeemed. He has made new. And that's what He wants to do with every life. And for some of you, there's just some encouragement to think about the way you do stuff. And that's great. I hope it'll inspire you and challenge you and encourage you. But some of you, you know you're stuck. Because you really want to, and it feels like your best attempt just slipped through your hands. And for you, God is saying, it doesn't have to be that way. This is not something that you are stuck with. It doesn't have to be this way, because he is a God of restoration and redemption. And if you know that's you, I'm simply going to ask that at the end, you go and get some prayer and ask God to begin that process today of seeing you set free to be the parent, to be the child, to be the spouse too, who God's designed you to be. That you say no to compounding the sin from generation to generation, and you say yes to this being a new, redeemed generation, a new generation where you enter more fully into the inheritance that God has for you.